professionally, social worker?
No,
right?
I would have, had I not been married, I would have gone on to graduate school. But I did not, and when we lived in Washington, I remember going down to the International Red Cross headquarters to see what I could do, if I can do volunteer work or do anything. And she said, without a graduate degree, there was nothing I could do.
And in those days?
In those days, yeah. So I should have gone on to graduate school while I was in Washington, but I didn't. I've been sorry that I didn't do that then. But sociology is not, doesn't pay for anything with my graduate work.
It might not pay, but certainly you were set for your, it must have been fabulous training for all your volunteers.
I suppose it was, actually.
Tell us about your meeting, your husband, your courtship.
Well, we've known each other since we were 12 years old. He also was a family that lived in East End, so our parents knew each other.
And his name is?
Mervyn Finstock. And we dated through high school, and off and on, and then dated again in college. He was in the Army Specialized Training Program, which was the government's way of sending boys through medical school and dental school fast to get them out so they could go into the service. And he did college and dental school in 2 years and 9 months. And they went around the clock, around the calendar year, rather. And they lived in the 12th floor at the Cathedral of Learning, which is where the National, in those days, it was the women's floor, which where Dean Rush was. And then now it's where the Nationality Room's office is. But the Army Specialized Training Program boys lived there. They had barracks there. And when we got married...
Did they have to pay to go?
They were part of the Army
at that point.
That's right. They were in the Army. He had been in ROTC before that. And then they started this program, and he was in it. And when he graduated, they didn't want to take him into the service because of chronic rhinitis, which is a sinus condition. But about a year or two later, the Army changed their mind, and he went into the service as a lieutenant. And he was at Fort Sam Houston, in Houston, for basic training, and was supposed to go overseas, but his orders were changed, and he went to Washington, D.C., the Walter Reed Hospital. He was a pediatric dentist, and there are any number of military camps around Washington, and they needed a child's dentist there, so that's where he was sent. So we spent from November of 46 to June of 48 in Washington. We lived in Tacoma Park, which is the heart of the Seventh-day Adventist, and it was right outside of Washington, outside of Silver Springs, which was a small community at the time. Silver Springs today is quite a large community. It's grown a lot in 50 years. So that was very pleasant, living in Washington.
When you said the Seventh-day Adventists live there, I know there's a large church that you see from the highway there. Do you mean this was a very large community?
It was a large community of Seventh-day Adventists, and I don't know if they still have it. They have what they call the Washington Sanitarium then, and in Tacoma Park. And it was the first time I didn't know what a Seventh-day Adventist was until then, but they observed the Shabbat, and they don't handle money on Saturday like we do, so it was interesting living among them. They were wonderful people, and we had a terrific experience being in that area, which was really very nice.
And did you meet a lot? Did you know anybody before you went to the Washington area?
No. Mm-hmm. No one at all.
So.
But we made a lot of friends from the military people that were there, and then we met some civilians also, so that was very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. And then you moved back to Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm. We came back to Pittsburgh in June of 48.
Mm-hmm.
When my husband was waiting for shipment overseas, my father bought the lot this house is on. So, I don't know what's making me so emotional. This is silly.
Anyways, he wanted him to feel he'd have something to come back to. The house was built while we were in Washington, so we came back here. We've been here ever since.
Who built the house? Your father bought the lot.
My father bought the lot. He got the house built.
He had the house built.
Mm-hmm.
You know what he paid for the house or a lot or a
loan?
Any idea? It'd be interesting. A bit of sociology.
The lot, I think, was somewhere in the area of 6,500. But that's about
how much?
6,500.
6,500?
Which was probably a lot in those days.
In those days, it was
a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah. I have no idea about the about anything else from it.
And you started a family when you came back?
My son was born in 1950.
And his name is?
Jeffrey.
And his birth date?
January 18th, 1950.
Who was that?
Jeffrey, my son.
January
1950.
Mm-hmm.
So that changed your life?
Well, sure. Gave it another dimension, to say the least. It was great.
And do you have other children?
I have two daughters. I have one that was born in 1953 and one that was born
and
in...
And her name is?
Susan.
Susan?
Yeah, February 6, 1953. And Ella was born in May 2, 1960.
And could you tell us about family life as you were raising your children?
Well, it was a very happy family. We did a lot of things together. Kids were great. The girls went to private school.
Where did they go?
They went to Winchester.
Why did you decide that private school might be better for them?
Well, the two older ones went to Hillel for a while. When Hillel moved into their new building on Beacon Street, my father had been very helpful in helping them get the school started, and my brother and sister-in-law, and we decided to send our girls there. The girls were 8 months apart. My niece is 8 months younger than my daughter, and they went there for 4 years, and then Susie went to Peabody for a year, and then she went to she was there for the first 4 years. And she went to public school for a few years, and then when she was in high school, she went into Winchester. Jeffrey went to public school. And
which?
He went to Fulton and went to Peabody.
Did you see a big difference in their educations?
I wasn't happy with Jeffrey's preparation in the primary grades. He didn't get the misfortune of the teacher in the first grade one was in an automobile accident and was out the better part of the year. The teacher in the second grade, something happened to her. For the first 3 years, it was very difficult because he didn't have one teacher for a whole year. And I felt that he needed extra work, and we decided to put both of them, Susie and Jeffrey, into Hillel, where they went for 4 years, and he graduated from Hillel, and then he went to Peabody, and then he went on to college.
Where'd he go?
He went a year to Vanderbilt. He went to Vanderbilt in June of 67, which was an interesting experience for him because it was the Six-Day War. And most of the young people who were there in summer school had never seen a live Jew before. And there was that cartoon of Superman, Super Jew. And
because Vanderbilt is located
in Nashville, Tennessee. It's the Harvard of the South. It was a great little school. But Jeffrey stayed there for a year. And he felt he wasn't happy with the, he was in the fraternity, he was very active in the fraternity, he just was not happy at Harvard, at Vanderbilt, and he wanted to transfer, so we transferred to Wisconsin. And that's where he finished. He went there for 3 years till he graduated. And that's where he met his wife.
Madison.
Right.
Can you tell us some of your family customs or traditions?
I know. I guess I just take so many things for granted. But we were an observant family. We observed all the holidays. We did a lot of things together. The family was very close in that. Almost everybody lived in the East End area, both in my family and my husband's family. And we have had a very, very good life.
Did in your social life, tell us a little about that.
That's always been very good too. I don't know. I don't really know what to say about it.
But do you have special hobbies?
I've always loved to read. I've learned to play golf. I'm not the best golfer. I enjoy it. I play at the game. We now have a greenhouse. We do some gardening. I've been a docent at Rutter Solomon's Biblical Garden, and I've been a docent at Phipps for about 15, 16 years.
Mm.
So, and I enjoy my club work very, very much.
Tell us about the beginning of your volunteerism.
Well, when I came back from the service, I was invited to Charter Day.
To what?
Charter Day. Which was in 1948 when Hadassah went on the group plan. And I went to Charter Day for the East End group. And I guess I've been hooked ever since then. And I was active in the group and then in the chapter and in the region. And I've continued my association with Hadassah, along to all the organizations. I've been active with Israel Bonds. I've been active in the synagogue. I was the sisterhood president. I was the congregational president.
And when were you sisterhood and congregational president?
You're taxing my memory now. I don't remember, to tell you the truth.
About, I don't need the exact date. Sisterhood and congregation. Actually, you can combine them. Just give me a...
Sisterhood president was about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was instrumental in starting the first adult bat mitzvah class in the city.
So in the late 70s.
Yeah, and I was bat mitzvah then myself. And then a few years later I became congregation president.
Were you the first woman president of the congregation?
Ben Israel, yeah.
Was that the first woman president of a conservative show?
No, well, the conservatives, okay. It might have been if a conservative, but it wasn't the first one in the city because I think Temple David had a woman president before B'nai Israel did, but Temple David's reformed, so maybe for conservative, I was the first one. Yeah, I imagine I must have been.
And what was it like for you?
Enjoyable, really very enjoyable. I had a good time. I worked hard, but I enjoyed myself.
It was a major speaker program at B'nai Israel.
When Rabbi Schechter, Jack Schechter was here.
What was his name, Rabbi?
Rabbi Jack Schechter.
Yeah.
He currently is Dean of Continuing Education at the University of Judaism, which is the West Coast branch of the seminary.
Rabbi Jack Schechter during about the 60s and 70s.
That's right.
And what relation did you have to him?
Very friendly. We still are.
Anything more? I mean, how did you know him more?
I knew him
See,
very
that was
well.
A major activity around here.
I knew him very well. We worked with him on promoting that adult education program. His wife was the teacher of that first bat mitzvah class.
Mm-hmm.
We remained good friends.
Mm-hmm. That adult education program, I'd like you to talk about a bit more. That lasted for several years, and there used to be about 600 people come, and that's unusual in Pittsburgh.
Well, but Rabbi Schechter was able to bring
good speakers.
Very fine speakers. The first time Elie Wiesel came to Pittsburgh, he came to B'nai Israel. Dr. Heschel was here once. A Professor Albright was here. Chaim Potok, I had dinner with him. Trying to think.
Bishop of Singer? Or did he come to the University of Pittsburgh?
No, he was
here. He was here. Potok. Himmelfarb. Not Himmelfarb. One from Canada. The one who said, don't give Hitler a posthumous victory by disappearing. I heard him there. Anyway, there's a long list. There's been
speakers.
No other like it.
No, and there's never been another adult education
like it,
series
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
Mm-hmm. That's why I wanted.
What happened to it?
Well, we did it for many years, and you know, like everything else, I guess it wore its way through a course of so many years. I think it was about 6-7 years we did it. And then, of course, other organizations in the city start bringing in speakers too, and eventually, the series was finished before Rabbi Schechter left. I mean, it was not his departure that ended it; it mm-hmm. was ended before he moved on.
Yeah, it always did that little. He wrote that little Shabbos book.
Was there anything else about your tenure as president that you would like to share with us? Did you have any difficulty because you were a woman? It never hampered you at all?
Not at all.
Do you think maybe it was an advantage ever?
I don't know, not really an advantage. What I found was that being a woman and being the first woman and being a product of the congregation, it was like everyone was so proud that somebody that grew up there would do that. And they sort of, I just felt very much loved by everybody and smothered with love. I don't know how else to put it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strange thing, and I don't know that it happens too often. It's just a very comfortable experience, and it was very, very enjoyable. It really was.
Okay. Were you the president of Hadassah before that? When was that? Tell us about that.
I was president of Hadassah from 1965 to 68. And that was when my husband was president of the synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
So you followed your husband as president of the synagogue. Wow.
Yeah. And I was president of Hadassah during the Six-Day War.
65.
Before that, I
now this was of the whole Pittsburgh region of Hadassah.
Chapter, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I had been chairman of the Women's Division of Israel Bond. I was chairman when I was pregnant with my third child, and my first trip to Israel was in 1959, and I was the bond chairman then.
Could you tell us about that trip?
It was an exciting trip.
What year was it?
1959.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Israel's 11th anniversary. We were there for the anniversary and for the parade, which was very, very exciting. It was a super trip, it really was. And when someone says, I envy you your first trip, I know why.
Mm-hmm.
I've been back 4 times since. While I was the chairman for Israel Bond,
And what year was that for
them? That was 19... Ellen was born while I was the chairman.
So it must have been from 1959
mm-hmm.
to about 1961 or something like that. I remember, well, to give you a good story, in 1957, I was the donor chairman for Hadassah. And in December, the December before of 1956, we were at a dinner for Goldie Meir. She was detained at the United Nations, and the ballroom of the William Penn was full, and we all waited for her all evening long. There was a vocalist that evening who sang and entertained everybody while we waited for her to come. And I think maybe she came in about 9, 10 o'clock. And I'll never forget when she walked into the ballroom. She was a short lady. She was surrounded by these state police in the black uniforms who had escorted her in from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And here's this little woman who walks into the ballroom of the William Penn Hotel, surrounded by these state troopers in the black leather uniforms. It was really an impressive occasion.
And Israeli Secret Service, who you did not know. My cousin was one of them.
Exactly, because they were in plain clothes.
Mm-hmm.
But that was tremendously impressive. And she was small, and she was not beautiful to look at, but when she opened her mouth, she was exquisite. It was just a wonderful evening. It really was. I also had the pleasure of taking Eleanor Roosevelt to the railroad station while I was chairman.
Uh-oh.
And she was another lady who wasn't beautiful on the outside, but once she opened her mouth, it was really a privilege. I met Jimmy Roosevelt. I'm trying to think who else during those years, because we were all, Abba Eban was here. It was an exciting time. Eban has such a golden tongue. And in those days, he really spoke above the heads of most of the people in the audience. But it was just a pleasure to be exposed to these people. It was really special.
And how were you able to translate their message to the people who inspired them?
You know, you use the word translate, Judy. It's almost... they create such an aura about them that it just speaks for itself. It really does. And it's such a pleasure to have been near them and be exposed to them and to have been able to, you know, exchange words with them. It's just so exciting.
Right. They are awe-inspiring in themselves. But I guess what I'm trying to get from you is how you then were able to go to the troops to inspire them year after year to do all the things that had to be done. You know, how you were able to transmit that.
I guess the inspiration is so great that it gives you the impetus to do that which you may not realize you have. It just pushes you. The cause is so great. The need is so great. And every time I went to Israel, I just got re-inspired. And I don't know, I guess it was God was walking with me and leading me. Had to be that way. Because not that good with words to really be able to put it into words. It's just
well,
a gut feeling.
There are so many dedicated volunteers
people.
And people like you are that find the strength always, and
yeah.
And I think that's a very special trait, and I think it's important to understand that.
I honestly don't know. You find the ability to do what has to be done. I sort of comes from the inside, I guess. I guess because if you feel strongly about something, you're able to promote it and sell it. It's a sales job, actually.
But you did so much of this and devoted so much of your life to it when you could have been maybe just playing cards or playing golf.
Well, I did try to learn to play bridge, and I never did master the game. And in the early years, when we were younger, I played at golf. The meetings came first. As I had a friend once who said to me, she said, golf is not primary to you. I said, no. And I guess that's now it's more primary than it was.
Were there any organizations that seemed more special to you?
Anything that was related to Israel was special to me. Israel Bonds, JNF, Hadassah, synagogues primarily, Federation. I chaired various facets of the Federation, the Women's Division.
I think I also recall, weren't you president of the Jewish Women's Organization?
I was president of Conference of Jewish Women's Organizations. I was president of the American Zionist Movement in those days. I forget what all, but there were a lot of things that I, and Bonds I was the chairman of twice.
Chairman twice?
Twice, two different times, several years in between.
Was there anything that stands out that you were able to do or accomplish that you think was especially important?
After we're through talking, I'll think of things right now.
Well, fine, we will be with you again. Did you always have the support of your family? They never resented
I imagine the kids did. Jeffrey has a middle initial H, and he used to say when he was a little boy, the H stood for Hadassah. But I imagine they must have resented it. I mean, it's only natural that they would, but my husband was always very patient and very supportive. And my family was too. My mother and father were very supportive. And I guess they showed me the way, and then I followed suit. My family was always involved in the community, and I guess they set the example for me.
You said you were president of the Hadassah chapter during the Six-Day War in 1967. Would you tell us about that?
Well, everybody worked very hard. Did everything we could to, we had a successful campaign, fundraising campaign. We helped the Federation during those days quite a bit for that campaign. It was just a joint effort. The whole community pulled together for everything that had to be done, as they always do. And unfortunately, when blood is spilled, the community unites so much more strongly than it does when there's no blood. And that's very sad, but that's the fact of life. But the community really responds. Don't catch my cold.
I don't have a cold.
No, don't catch mine.
Has the neighborhood changed where you live?
The neighborhood has changed. This block has not changed, particularly my neighbor next door.
You live on North Island Avenue, and you're
right
near
at the
Howland.
Entrance to the Highland Park Reservoir. My next door neighbor is black. He's a dentist. She has her PhD. And my feeling is if they can maintain the house and afford the house, is it to raise? And that's the bottom line. But the surrounding neighborhood has changed. It's unfortunate because Liberty is not what it once was.
have you experienced anti-Semitism?
There was more of it here in the early years than there is now. Now I would say no, but in the early years there was some. I never have really been a victim of it or been faced with it in a very strong way, fortunately. But I know that it existed in this area.